Okay, let's start. So this is the agenda for today. We will learn about ISA, Instruction Set Architecture, today. And we will learn what's the difference between ISA and microarchitecture. We will know what are the different ways we can design ISAs and why we see the current ISAs as we see them now. And then we will talk about a toy ISA. It's called Y8664, which is a very simple ISA that you will use throughout the course to design a very simple microprocessor. So we will know how it looks like, what's the format, how we encode and decode using this ISA. So first, I guess, take a look at what do we mean by ISA. So basically, this is an interface between the software and hardware. So if we think about our whole system stack, at the high level, we have some problem that we are trying to solve. And at the lowest level, we have all these circuits that actually at the end solve that problem. But from that problem to circuits, we have to go through a level of transformation to make sure that the circuits can solve that problem. So we have algorithms and applications which we write in order to solve a problem. Then there is operating system which we use to run our programs. So these are all at the software level. And at the hardware level, we have circuits. We use that circuits in blocks to make some high-level design. And then there is the processor, which has multiple elements using those block devices. So this ISA says that what the software can ask the hardware to do. So this is an interface exposed to the programmers or the system. And if I want to tell the hardware to do something, that is the interface we use. So hardware provides that guarantee that anything it promised to do with the ISA, if the software asks it to do that, the hardware will actually carry on the task. But then, if something is within the hardware which is not exposed to the software, that's something we call microarchitecture. So a very simple example could be, suppose in your programs you're adding something. So there is an instruction called add, and the ISA defines what's the format of that add instruction. Where is the source, where is the destination, how many operands and it takes, etc. So this is all defined in ISA. But the microarchitecture is the implementation of that add instruction. And there could be multiple ways to implement it in the hardware, but how it is implemented or how many cycles it takes to actually add something, those are all encapsulated from the system. So that's microarchitecture. And the format, the semantic of the add instruction, that is part of ISA. So usually we say that ISA plus microarchitecture is equal to the full architecture. So one real world example of how ISA and microarchitecture interacts could be how we use our cars. So in the car, there is engines which will make sure that the car runs. But then how that is implemented, that's not exposed to the drivers. As a driver, we just have some brakes and pedal to brake or accelerate it. So ISA is this interface between the driver and the car. And microarchitecture is the implementation of all these things under the hood going on, how we should accelerate the car in the mechanical level. So I guess I already talked about this. So we can have add instructions, which is defined by the ISA, but there could be many multiple implementation of that. And when we talk about hardware coming out, Itanium or Pentium, I guess these are all old, or some dual core machine or 8-core Spark machine. So that's all microarchitecture, because that's where the vendors are changing how things are implemented. But usually the ISA remains the same, but there are still multiple ISAs which we currently have. I guess, do I have them? Okay. I guess some of examples are here, but we will see some more. But x86 is the most dominant one, which is used by Intel. So what are the parts of ISA? So it defines what kind of instructions we have in our machines. How can we identify what are those instructions? How should we access memory? Then different type of instruction, how many registers we have in memory. So basically these are the things we will actually see throughout the course with even our Y86 ISA. But it actually defines many other things. For example, how should we handle interrupts or calls in the system, how the I/O should work, the operating system level managements like power or thermal management. These are also defined in the ISA, but we will not look at those, at least in this course. But if you want to know what are the things defined in the ISA, you can take a look at the Intel manual for x86. And it is actually a book, like you can go through it and read all the things that has been defined in x86. So these are some example ISAs that we actually have nowadays. Some of the ISAs actually, we lost them, we don't produce them anymore. X86 is the most dominant one, but then if you, most probably your phones may have ARM processor, some supercomputers will have power, MIPS is a very simple one. So basically there are at least a bunch of ISAs existing in the real world. But they are still actually, the number is still smaller than the microarchitectures that we have in the real world. I guess, okay. So that kind of leads to the decision that why these ISAs are different or what makes them different. And why do we have at least a bunch of ISAs that we see in the real world? So there are different ways people have designed their ISAs. And one of the factors that usually the designers have considered is what would be the length of the instructions. So the ISA could have a fixed length for all the instructions. For example, 8 bytes, or 10 bytes, or 32 bytes. But it could also have variable length for each different instruction. Maybe some of them have 2 bytes, some of them have 12 bytes. And it's upon the vendors to design what they would like to do. But I guess, what are the pros and cons? So if instructions have fixed length, then actually it's really easy to decode that instruction. If I know that each instruction takes 32 bytes, I know where the instructions start and end, and it's easy to know where my instructions are. But at the same time, it might be wasting some of the spaces in the ISA. So maybe I have used 32 bytes, but I don't have that many instructions in my ISA. So in that case, maybe there are some bits wasted. But I guess because it's easier to decode, fixed length has some advantages. So, another problem is it's actually hard to extend. For example, if I had 32-bit ISA, and I have used all combination of 32 bits for all the instruction in my ISA. But then, for some reason, there is a new instruction that we think might be helpful for the programmers, but we just don't have enough bits to encode it. So it's hard to actually extend this fixed length ISA. For variable length, because we can use any number of bytes we choose to have for each instruction, it's actually easier to encode. So for example, Intel had this machine in 80s called 432. It actually had instructions which could be 6 bits to 321 bits. And it could use a very sophisticated encoding to encode all the instructions with those bits. So that's the benefit, that if it's variable length, it's we could have a very compact encoding. But then the difficulty is now it's actually hard to decode. For example, if my first instruction is 6 bits, then second instruction is 20 bits. Somehow I have to decode the first instruction to know that where it ends, and only then I can start reading the next one. So x86 actually have variable length, and the y86, the toy one that we will learn, it's actually also, it has variable length. Any question here? No. Okay. So another thing that people consider for ISA is addressing mode. By addressing mode, we mean that how we can obtain an operand for an instruction. The operand can come from register, it could be some constant, it could come from memory. And from memory, there are different ways we could actually get that value. It could be just an address, it could be two registers that we add and then take that value as the memory location. So there are many different ways we could access the memory. And for example, here I'm showing example from 86, x86 64. So basically, it has two registers and two constant values. And we take, I guess, have you seen this before?
Yes.
Yes, okay, I guess you have seen. So basically, we index it and then scale it, then add the displacement. So there is multiple operations going on to get the memory location. For example, then ARM has a way to just take the register and shift the value, and that value would point to the memory location. And VAX is an ISA, which was actually, I guess we will talk about it more. So it was around 80s, and it has many sophisticated features. So here, VAX had an addressing mode where we will actually take the pointer-to-pointer of that register value to and use that as our memory location. Any question here? Another thing people consider is if we have condition codes or not. So what is a condition code? It's basically saying that we will have instructions, the capability to do something based on some condition. For example, if we just have a compare instruction and we want to compare two values and based on their result, we want to jump somewhere. So this is a simple instruction stream where we have two instructions and based on the value, we are jumping to somewhere. But also, what we could do is we could merge these two instructions to one using conditional code. So here, what this instruction says is we will branch to some place based on if these two registers are equal. So basically, these two are doing the same thing, but here we actually, the semantic is different. We just have one instruction. And within that one instruction, these two values are compared, and based on the condition, we jump, where here we actually have two instructions. We compare, we set some bits in our flags, based on that, we jump somewhere. Yes?
Does that say computation time if you write it the second way?
It depends. So here we are saying that we have two instructions and there is some amount of time both of them have to take. And here we are saying that it's kind of encapsulated hardware is doing for us. So we will talk about it more actually. So if the hardware did it properly, it should be faster. But it's not, I guess it's not guaranteed. If it's single cycle maybe, should I talk about it?
I think most of the reasons for choosing one or the other are related to issues which are more complicated than how long each instruction takes, but about how easy it is to do instructions in parallel. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
We'll touch on a little.
When we will see it throughout the semester. So hopefully you will be able to answer yourself within some weeks. So another design consideration with ISA is what should be the capability of the instructions. So at the high level, we have all these programming languages like C#, C++, Java, and at the lowest level, we have our hardware. So our ISA could have the capability to be very close to the high-level language, or it could be actually very close to the hardware. So based on that, we call the ISAs, we have divided the ISAs into two categories, complex instruction set and simple instruction set architecture. And one example of complex ones could be, I guess here I'm giving some example from the VAX machine again. So it was a CISC machine, complex instruction set computer. And it had instructions which could do very complicated things. For example, if we were accessing a multi-dimensional array, it could actually do it in one instruction, and also it would do the bound check. Some other examples of complex instruction could be quicksort or doing FFT. And think about, like, if I ask you to write a quicksort even in C, it will be actually a pretty medium-sized code. So, but with the CISC machines, they actually had the capability to do all that with one instruction in the hardware. So you will just say quicksort, define the parameters, and in the hardware, it will do all that. So basically, if we say that this is hardware, this is the high-level language, the ISA could be very close to our high-level language, which kind of is defined by the SIS machines. Or it could be very close to the hardware, like very simple instruction like just add or move some logical operation. Those are called RISC processors. So what are the trade-offs? So if we have a complex instruction, then actually the compiler is very simple because the compiler doesn't have to do that much to schedule the instruction. So all it has is very like sort and do something else, and it has just simple instruction. It has smaller number of instructions to do the same thing. But with RISC, compiler actually is now capable to take our instruction streams, which consist of just adds and multiply and move, and it can schedule the instructions in a way that we could optimize the code in the compiler. So the hardware is very complex for CISC machines, but the hardware is very simple for RISC machine because most of the work we are doing at the software level. So what do you think about the performance? Like, would the CISC better or would be the RISC better? Who is for CISC? No one? RISC? Okay, couple of hands. So actually, it's a debatable thing, and it's hard to say which one is better because it depends on many other things. But there are some things that people have noticed. So for example, let's take, so these are some example instructions from our VAX machine. And let's take which one, I guess. Let's take the NQ and DQ. Like with VAX machine, we could NQ or DQ to a double linked list with just one instruction. So if that instruction, who designed that instruction didn't design it well in the hardware, it could happen that it's actually much slower than what we could have done from the software. But on the other hand, if the hardware architect is designed it pretty well, maybe it wouldn't be that slow. The other point that people make is with CISC, because we use compact coding, the instruction size would be smaller. So most of the time, we will need less memory, less cache space, and we will have better performance. But at the same time, it's not clear because we have all this cache in our system. So maybe even the code size is larger, we could actually fit it in the cache. So this has been a topic of debate for many, many years, which one is better. But essentially, it depends on many, many things, and it's hard to say one is better than other. But like nowadays, x86 is a CISC instruction set, so it has complex instruction. But then we have ARM, which is kind of in the middle. It has some characteristics of CISC, some RISC. So nowadays, it's kind of all blurred. But VAX is one instruction set, which is, we would say that this is at the extreme, it was CISC. Then we had some simple instruction set like MIPS, which kind of, we could say this represents RISC. So I guess I kind of talked about it. So this is an x86 instruction, repeat move S, which basically moves a bunch of characters from source to destination. And we could have used some simple instructions to do the same thing. So if we are using the RISC machine, compiler is supposed to optimize the code in a way that we actually can exploit all these optimizations. And here, the hardware is responsible to make sure that it has been designed correctly. And I guess it should be fast too. So when people came up with RISC, the main motivation was we want to make sure that if the hardware didn't optimize all the things properly, we actually have some other way to optimize the code, because hardware is very hard to change. But if we want to change something in the compiler, it's actually really easy. And we also wanted to make sure that the hardware is simple, so the hardware designer doesn't have to do too much work, because if the hardware is making some mistake, it's really hard to correct it. So the typical RISC properties would be they have very simple instructions. Usually they have separate instructions to access memory. So for example, move, like we move something from memory to register, and only then we can do something with that value in the register. Usually they have fixed length instructions. They have more registers to compensate that they don't have too many complex instructions. Usually they operate with only just one memory operand, few addressing modes. But yes. So for example, I can design an instruction. So for example, add. And I can say that add two values, and both of the values are in memory. Or I could say that I have an add instruction, but it can add values only when they're in registers, in some registers. So if I say that, if I have all this capability to add even in memory or in register, then the instruction state is more complex, right? But if we just say that, no, we want our instructions to be very simple. The only thing it can do is it can add two values from registers. Then we actually have some extra instruction like move, where the functionality is just take the value from memory and bring it to the register. So that makes the instruction set simpler. But for the CISC machines, usually they provide the functionality that you would be able to add values in memory or do something else. But as I was saying, it's kind of, so these are not hard rules. So basically, kind of we say that CISC is supposed to have some properties, RISC is supposed to have some properties, but the instruction sets that we see nowadays, most of them kind of have a mix of them. So they're in the middle. So in this spectrum, like VAX is definitely CISC, MIPS is definitely RISC, but all the others, they're kind of in between in this region. Okay. Any question here so far on RISC versus CISC? So now we want to take a look at the ISA that we will use in this course, which is called Y8664. So basically, it is based on x86, which is a CISC instruction, CISC machine. But like, because we are we have this ISA because we want to actually build a very simple processor. So in order to make things easier for you, it omits most of the instruction in x86, and it has capability for only these instructions. So we have some logic operations and XOR, arithmetic, add and subtract. Then we have some jump instructions, some move which transfer data to and from memory, and some instructions for stack operations. And definitely, it doesn't use the encoding for x86. We use a very simpler encoding so that it's easier to implement. I guess let's go through the instructions. Yes.
I'm sorry, I maybe we've mentioned this before, but is y86 commercially implemented?
No, no, it's just a very simple ISA we will use because that's the one you guys will use to implement a very simple processor. So but it has some similarity with x86, but not too much. So it has like some instructions, some capability for some instruction, but not all x86 instruction. So we will see that what are the instruction that it supports. And you can say that, okay, I'm not happy with the instruction that it's supporting, I want my own instruction. That you can add after this course is done, then you will know how to add another instruction. But for now, we will just stick to what's given by this course. So the first instruction we will talk about is move. Basically, it moves data from source to destination. So that's why we have, before move Q, we have two letters. The first one is the source, the next one is destination. And we have three choices for source and destination. We could have constant, register, or memory. And Y86 actually doesn't provide the capability for every combination that you can think of. It only supports transferring value from immediate to register, register to register, memory to register, and register to memory. The ones that are shaded, it doesn't actually support these. Then it actually have a conditional move, which is basically it copies value from source to destination only if the condition is satisfied. So I guess we kind of saw it earlier. So C move G, it says that move the value from RAX to RBX only if RAX is greater than RBX. And we could have done this, yes.
Only if the condition for greater than is true.
Yes.
Not RBX.
Yes, okay, yeah, sorry. So the condition that we said earlier, I guess, yeah. We have some register which says if the earlier operation that we did is they are supposed to set or unset the values on those registers, and based on what is set on those registers, we could we would only move the values if those registers are set or not set. But we will, I guess, we will see that in a couple of slides. But basically, we just remember for now that we have this move Q instruction where we have IR, RR, MR, and RM. But also we have this C move instruction, which is move conditionally. Then we have this halt instruction, which basically says that stop the processor. This is kind of an instruction which is provided for, again, for easier implementation. So here in the processor that we will design, halt means that just stop the processor. In real processor, this is we don't have things like that. Basically, OS is OS handles what should happen when a program finishes. But we have these capability in our instruction set. then what are the addressing modes that we have? Basically, we have just, we don't have too complex things. We have very simple things. So for example, we have this capability. So we can take the value of the register and add a displacement and take that value as our memory location. So for example, here rm move q means that move this value of the register R11 to memory location, which we will get when we take the value of R2 and add 10 to it. But I guess we don't have the opposite one. So if I say that take the value of this memory location, add to R2, and then put the value in R2, we actually have to use multiple instructions. So here, this is kind of relates to what I was saying about the capability to access memory with an instruction. So all the add instructions that we have here is we could add two values which are both in register. So that's why if I want to add something from memory, first we actually need to bring it from memory to register and then add the two registers. Any question here? So this is another example where we are supposed to multiply the value of R11 and add something to it to get the memory location. So this is something I guess you have used in assembly language before, but this is not supported by, like, with one instruction. It is not supported in Y86. So if we want to do this, we again have to do multiple operations to do this kind of addition. So first, if you go to here, so these are all the instructions that we have, and you can see that we don't have any multiplication. So that's why instead of multiplication, what I'm doing here is adding R11. So okay, adding R11 to R11 and putting it in the same register is multiplying it by 2. So that's why we have done it 3 times to multiply R11 by 8. And then we actually move the value from memory to R1, R11, and then add 2 registers. So you could ask that, like, this seems like a very dumb way to do things, but again, remember the goal. The goal is we have this simple ISA and we will implement it as it is been implemented in a hardware. So the capability, what it can do or not do, that was not, we're not trying to maximize that. So we want to make sure that the instruction set is very simple so that it's easier to implement in hardware. Usually you won't be asked to take a code and convert it to Y86 and do something with that. Our goal is we want to have this simple instruction set, which is easier to implement. And this, you will see that, like, not having some of the capabilities will help you and make the design simpler. Then constants. So again, the add instructions that we saw, it can only operate on 2 register values. So there is no way we could add constant and a register. So that's why if we actually want some constant in an operation, first we have to move that constant to a register, and only then we can add those values. And again, you will see it just, it will make your life easier. Okay, I guess now we are back to condition codes. So ZF says that if the operation, if the operation we did and the result of that operation is zero or not, and sign B, sign flag basically says that this flag will be set if the value was negative. And you, I guess you guys know about other flags, overflow or carry, but we won't actually implement it in this course. And these flags are set by these four instructions, to logic and to arithmetic, add, sub, and XOR. The flags are not set by anything, any other instructions. And I guess it's kind of intuitive when those flags are set. So for example, if I have the subtraction instruction, based on what's the result, it, the flags will get set based on what we have in the values. And I guess it's very intuitive and you don't need to memorize it or anything. Basically, when you're implementing the ISA, you will look at this table and try to see how to implement the logics. The next thing we will talk about is stack operations. So Y86 has a stack and we can push and pop values from that stack. And I guess as like any other stack, it grows in the opposite direction. And RSP is the register that always points to the top of the stack. So if we try to get the value pointed by RSP, we will get the top. And we have two instructions, push and pop. What push does is it will push some value at the next location and make sure that the RSP points to the new location. And pop will just pop the value at the top and adjust RSP accordingly. Any questions? So now let's see what's the format of this ISA. We have talked about the encoding for a while, but we haven't actually seen anything. So basically, this is the format. The instructions can take at most 10 bytes, but you can see that they have variable lengths. So the first 4 bits, they say that what kind of operation this instruction would do. So for halt, it's zero. I guess let's take the first 8 bytes instead of 4 bytes. So the first 8 bytes would say that what kind of operation it would do. But there are, I guess, some variations here. We will talk about that later. Yeah. First 8 bits, sorry. So if we see that there is 00 in the first 8 bits, it means that the instruction is halt. Then I guess the other simpler one is return. If it's in hexadecimal 90, it's halt. But let's take the conditional move. So with the conditional move, first 4 bits is 2, and then depending the next 4 bits, we could have different kind of conditional mode. So if it's
that should 2, the 7 should be 2s.
Okay. Oh, okay. I guess this is a copy paste problem. Yeah. So the sevens have to be twos, but I guess the next four bits, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, says that if the conditional move is less than, equal, greater than or equal, and etc. And again, I guess, yeah.
You should pay special attention to the 0 entry, which is not obvious.
Okay. So the 0 entry says that we will do the operation regardless of the condition. So it's basically just ignore the condition and move some value regardless of it. So basically it becomes register to register move. So if we see 2 and then 0 and then there are 2 register values, that means that we are just moving the value from one register to other. So it says that just ignore the condition. Any question? Yes. Does it make things easier?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It is actually easier to implement. I know you don't believe that now.
It makes things easier. And the other thing is, I guess we could have added one more instruction. Yeah. So for now, let's assume that this is how it's done. And once you actually start implementing it, you will see that is this a good encoding or not? Or maybe you can come up with a better encoding, yes.
So is the full code 270?
Which one? Can you
repeat? So for our model, is it 270?
27. Oh, sorry. So actually, I will correct it. So these are supposed to be 2. So it would be 20, and then we have to specify the registers. So when I post the slide, I will correct it. So again, for this instruction, which is our logical and arithmetic operation, the first 4 bits are 6, which will say that we have one of these 4 instructions depending on the next 4 bits. So the function here says if it's 0, it's add, if it's 1, subtract, 2 and 3 XOR. And we have an instruction which is conditional jump, and the conditions here is actually same as the one we saw with conditional move. So if the first 4 bits, they're supposed to be 0 to say that this is a jump instruction, and the condition would be based on the next 4 bits. So if it's 0, it means that the condition doesn't apply, just regardless, just take the jump. And then we have other conditions. Okay, so first of all, this is something would be always given to you, like you will look at it and try to implement the ISA, but I will go through each of them again to make sure that it kind of sinks in. So here I said that like these are the first byte where we have some values and then there is space for register. So here in the Y86 we have 16 registers and you can see that each register has some specific value assigned to it. So if we see 0, it will always mean that the register is RAX. And so on. Again, you don't have to kind of memorize it. This is kind of a reference that you will use it to look up which register you're using. I guess here, this is a special case. If we have F in the positions that we are expecting a register, it means that no register. So again, this is a choice that we made to make things easier. So for example, here, instruction register move, immediate register move. So that if you compare to the register move, basically there are two registers and this instruction it only takes one register. So by keeping the format same and having an F here to indicate that we are not using the second register, it is making the encoding easier. But definitely we have done this to make implementation easier. We could have come up with some optimized ISA, but that would have made your life much more difficult. So I guess, okay. So now let's see, let's go through the instruction a bit. Any question here? So here, suppose I have an instruction which says take the value of RA, RB and put it in RA. That's it, yeah, okay. So basically, the first 4-bit is 6 to say that this is a logical or arithmetic operation. Then the next 4-bit is 0 for add. So then it says that it's an add instruction and we are expecting two register values after that. So if we have add Q, RAX, RSI, so the first byte, I guess we are getting from here. So first 4-bit is opcode and part of the opcode which is which kind of instruction. And the next 4-bit says what kind of operation within our logic and arithmetic operation. And then we have to encode the register values. So RAX, I guess we know from here it's 0, so that's why we have a 0 here. And RSI, which is here, and 6 denotes the value RSI, so we have 6 here. So in our bit stream, like in our instructions, if we see these values, it means that we have an add instruction with these two registers. Any question? Okay. I guess I told it, okay. And we already talked about this, like if this is these next 4-bits are 0, that's add, 1 is subtract, 2 is and 3 is XOR. And remember that these are the instructions that set the flags. And for move operation, we have four kind of moves. Register to register, immediate to memory, register to memory, memory to register. And again, you don't need to actually memorize it, but like the first byte, if it's 20, 30, 40, or 50, then we know that this is a move instruction. And then depending on the value of the opcode, if it's register to register move, we expect that there would be two registers. If it's immediate to register, that means that here we are expecting the value of the register, and then we actually have 8 bytes for our immediate value. This is kind of example for RM and MR move. So this D is the value we will use to calculate our memory location. I think these are kind of mechanical things. The conditions for C move, which again you saw that the first 4 bits will be always 2, and the next 4 bits will change depending on what kind of condition we want to use. This is jump with condition, very similar. And I guess the stack we all also saw. So I guess I will just skip this and get to that. Given that we have this table which shows what's the encoding of the all the instruction, how we can, like, let's do an example to see how we use it to encode and decode. So this is a very simple code, which is basically adding 1 to value x. And with x86c, if you compile it to assembly, you will get something. But for y86, because our semantics is slightly different. So first what we do is we move the value 1 to 1 register. So this is IR move Q. And then we use the add instruction to add these 2 registers. And then we say return, which means that we are done. So we will take these 3 instructions and see that how we can convert it to our encoding in Y86. So this is basically, remember that this is the ISA, this is already given to us. So let's take the first instruction, IR move Q, 1 and RX. So here it says that for IR move Q, we will have 3, 0, F, and this RB is the value of the register, which here is RAX. And then we have the place to put our immediate. We have 8 bytes. And remember that this will be in little Indian format. So that's why the LSB comes first. The value 1 here is 01, and these are the MSBs. But for RAX, we have to put the number of the register. And RAX is 0, like if you go back to that table, you will see that RAX is 0. So if we see this bit stream, it means our first instruction. So for the second one, the add instruction. Here, if you go back to this operation Q instruction, it says that we should start with 6. And this function would say that if it's an add instruction, and then we are supposed to put 2 registers. So here we have to put the value for add, and then we have to put the values for RDI and RAX. And if we look up that table again, we will see that for add, we are supposed to put 0 here, and 7 and 0 for the registers. Any question? And then for return, it's kind of very simple. We just look it up, it's 90, so that's it. So if we put all of them together, these bits represent our function add 1, which is written in x86. And you can see that since this is not a fixed length instruction, I'm kind of pointing out where each instruction starts. But if you are just given a streams of bits, you actually have to figure out based on this encoding that where is each instruction ends. Any question? Okay. So let's do another example. So here we are trying to add 2 values, and that will set our flags, and based on the flag, we want, if it's greater or equal, we are supposed to jump to some place. And let's assume that this address is 0x123. Because we are supposed to put the memory location where we want to jump, the code location where we want to jump. So the first instruction is an add instruction. And basically, it's kind of the same thing that we did before. We look up here, add starts with 6, and then we need to put the function, add, and the register values, which becomes 6000. But then for jump, let's get to here. So it starts with 7, and then we have to put the condition code. And if you look up the table, you'll see that we need to put 5 here. But the important thing here is, again, like we have to put the address in 8 bytes, and it has to be Little Indian. So that's why 1, 2, 3 in hexadecimal, it becomes 2301, and the MSBs are all zeros. Any question here? Okay. So now we have these, so suppose we have this bit stream, and I'm telling you that this represents some instructions in our Y86 program. And we are supposed to decode it. So I guess how we could do that. So first thing we need to do is we need to determine where the instructions start and end. And actually to find that, we have to decode that instruction. But for simplicity, let's assume that I have already done it, and I'm giving you with the, so the red color indicates that where each instruction starts. So the first instruction is 2010, and you can see that with 2, starting with 2, there is only one kind of instruction, which is move instruction. And the second bit is supposed to say that what kind of function it operates. And because we have 0 here, basically it says that move always move. So, and then we have 2 register values, which are again 1 and 0. And if you look up that in our table, we will see it's RR move Q, RCX, RAX. Then the next instruction is starts with 60, and we can see that with 60 we have either arithmetic and logic operation. So basically this is kind of a, I think this is an example, you're supposed to do it by yourself. The second one is subtract, because it starts with 7. No, I guess I missed something. It starts with 6. Okay, it starts with 6 again. The next one starts with 7, which is the jump instruction. But here you have to be a little bit careful about the Indianness. The value here we have is 7, 2, and then we have 8, 4, and a bunch of zeros. So there is 8 bytes of immediate value, and we have to make sure that we start reading from the LSB. So that's why the value becomes 84. Yes. You had any question? No. And basically, then we have something else. I'm guessing you could do it by yourself. I think this is what I had so far, but do you have any questions? No? Any question regarding Y86 or CISC versus RISC? Yes?
When you're talking about determining like where one offcode ends and another begins, like, is that something
we have
to tell it, or is that built into like knowing how long it
operates? It's basically, once you see 20, you know that the first byte is supposed to tell you what's the operation, right? So you look it up here, and you see that any instruction that starts with 2 something requires 2 bytes. So then you know that, okay, this is the one, the third byte is supposed to start of the next instruction. So that's why you see that decoding is hard when it's variable length. But if it was fixed length, you didn't actually have to decode the first one. You could parallelly decode all the instructions as you know the starting point of each instruction.
Okay.
So this is, I guess, one trade-off between CISC versus RISC. Any more question? Okay, I guess let's I will see you next week. Thank you.